Outside of Seattle, Kent has the highest percentage of people living in poverty in King County cities, and Kent struggles to provide needed services for those people. Pat Gray is part of a homeless advocacy group called Kent Hope. Her goal was to find a location in Kent for a 24-hour homeless shelter. Kent Hope was strongly considering locating the shelter in downtown Kent, but she got pushback from some members of the downtown community.
Our stated purpose was to work with businesses and try to improve relations and try to come up with a shared vision. We allowed it 6 months, and everything that we found, we just disagree. We are just far apart.
Pat Gray and the rest of Kent Hope believe the shelter needs to be downtown, where it's close to other services. Greg Hafner is at a law firm in downtown Kent. It's located right next to one of the sites Kent Hope was considering.
That certainly makes sense, but it comes at the price of harming the businesses that are located around that shelter.
Some of the concerns Greg Hafner told us about specifically were loitering, trash on the streets, and even public defecation. But beyond what downtown Kent might look like with more homeless people, Pat Gray and Greg Hafner both say there's a deeper issue at play.
Kent has changed a lot since it was a little farming community. We do have people here, very poor people from lots of different cultures, and we have had to deal with that.
Yeah, I think that there's a culture here to a suburban city, a downtown area, that is not comfortable with a more urban feel. And is it so wrong for somebody to say, I want to live in as nice a neighborhood as I can provide?
Now, Kent's growing pains aren't necessarily unique. The transition from suburban to urban is something many smaller towns and suburbs go through. James Marone is an urban studies and political science professor at Brown University. And you've studied these transitions in communities across the U.S. Does the story of what's happening in Kent sound familiar to you?
Oh, yes, it very much sounds familiar, Jeannie. For starters, poverty is now a suburban phenomenon as well as an urban phenomenon. In fact, there are more poor people in America in the suburbs than there are in the cities. So on one level, this is very, very typical. A suburb grows into a city and suddenly faces urban problems. And we're seeing this right across the United States. So this kind of development, and your quote from one of the speakers exactly nailed it. We went to the suburbs to escape this stuff, and now here we are, as the suburb becomes more urban, more poor, more filled with problems, all the things we thought we were getting out of by getting out of Seattle, we're now confronting ourselves.
And that was Greg Hafner. He's an attorney with an office in downtown Kent. And he mentioned other Kent business owners have mentioned that the downtown area would be sullied potentially if lots of homeless people were loitering there. But if we look beyond that, if we look beyond the appearance of downtown Kent with more homeless people there, what do you think people are nervous about here? What do you think they're afraid of?
Well, there's two things. One is the oldest story in urban politics, and one is really very new. The oldest story is what we call NIMBY, not in my backyard. As long as there have been cities, homeowners and businesses have said, you know, you want that jail, you want that hospital, you want that homeless shelter, you want that not very attractive thing that we need to do, that's great. You build it, but not in my backyard. All urban planners know about it. We call it NIMBY. It is a classic problem. But there's something else going on in the United States, something very, very powerful that changes all this and gives it a new edge. And that's this. Americans have started to segregate themselves by wealth. The demographic studies are very dramatic, that you tell me where someone lives and I can tell you how much they make. And more each year, we find that Americans are living with people with incomes very roughly just like themselves. Poor people in poorer neighborhoods, wealthy people in wealthy neighborhoods. Now, this is a radical change from the America of the past. So now the NIMBY phenomenon is even more difficult and raises larger hackles, because essentially what Americans are saying by what they do is, I don't want to live next to your kind. I want to live next to my kind. But you know what? That's not possible. So we're constantly finding these kinds of issues. Want to build a homeless shelter? Don't want those kind of people near me. It's taken on a new intensity, and I think that's what you're seeing in Kent today.
I'm talking with James Marone. He's an urban studies and political science professor at Brown University, and we're talking about how smaller cities and suburbs like Kent handle growing pains, like creating and providing services for homeless people. And as we mentioned before, the city of Kent is trying to find a place to locate a 24-hour homeless shelter. And opponents to locating that shelter in downtown Kent say, you know what, we just scraped through the reception here, and we don't want to do anything to risk the business district in downtown Kent. How big of a concern do you think that should be?
You know, that of course that's a concern. So urban planners and lots of people, lots of good liberals, for example, will say, well, this is outrageous. You've got to take care of homeless people. But of course you can understand how other people feel. They're trying to build a nice community, and this social problem suddenly confronts itself and makes it more difficult for their community. But that raises the larger question for all Americans, which is, look, we have some very serious social problems. Who is going to own them? And right now, what we've got is almost everywhere you look, the answer is, well, someone's got to own it, but not me. Federal government, not really interested in large-scale homeless action. State governments are really strapped for funds. Local government, well, that's what we're seeing in Kent. They don't want to deal with it. And so we've got a few groups, like church groups, struggling to make things happen. But what really is the underlying problem is, as Americans, as citizens, we're not willing to own the problem. And I'll say one more thing, Jeannie, about this. This problem is worse in the Kents of America. A city like Seattle or Chicago or Los Angeles or San Francisco, they've had many generations to learn how to deal with this kind of problem. They've developed the organizational capacity, the government knowledge for how to deal with these problems. They've just got the government structures. New cities, they were suburbs. They weren't designed over many, many generations to address problems like this. So they grow up very rapidly, and they suddenly say, okay, where are our levers? Where are the government institutions with which we can deal with this? And you know what? They don't exist. So ironically, a small city like Kent has a much harder time dealing with this kind of problem than a large city like Seattle, which has had many generations to confront problems like this one.
Well, as you've looked at, as you've said, edge cities and how they grapple with these problems of poverty and homelessness as they come up, what solutions have they come up with? How do these communities in transition do this?
I'll tell you my favorite, and it's not nice, so I shouldn't be laughing when I say this, but one edge city, which I will not name, actually had the city council vote to give one-way bus tickets to homeless people so they could go anywhere in the country they wanted as long as it was one way and they didn't come back. So that is the classic example. We don't want this problem here. Send it elsewhere. Very few, very, very few of these new suburban edge cities have the wherewithal to deal with it. I think the answer has to be beyond Kent. I think states have to get together and begin to think, let's think of a solution that cuts across the cities from Kent to Washington to all the other areas in the state, because this is such a large problem and it's so intense at the point of the spear, at the point of the lance, where people are actually confronting one another.
Well, you just painted a picture where a sustainable solution for this goes well beyond Kent or any other edge city dealing with this. But what do you think the future holds for Kent?
Well, I think the very first thing we have to think about is people who are homeless themselves. And to remember that they're not just this band of undesirable them. People move in and out of homelessness all the time. Someone's getting a divorce. They've lost their income. Bang, they're homeless. But that doesn't mean they're homeless as part of their identity. And so what we have to begin to understand on the simplest level is, hey, wait a minute. You're just our neighbors who've hit upon hard times. It's not like you're going to be homeless for the rest of your life. It's not like this is, you know, like being left-handed. It's something that people go through. It's part of the, it was one of the stages in life. That's the single most important step, seeing them as our neighbors having hard times rather than as some kind of Martian that's suddenly been deposited on the streets of Kent.
Thank you so much for talking with me about this.
Thank you. It was really a pleasure.
James Marone is an urban studies and political science professor at Brown University, and he's the author of the book, The Devils We Know, Us and Them in American Political Culture.